Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
It's all about the macro productions.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a
I
have sent 6 of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with 2 German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rumble, band.video, Vigilante TV, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate your support. You want to connect with me, macroaggressions.io is the website. You can find information about the books and the partners and the news websites that we have, podcasts, everything that we're doing is found at macroaggressions.io. Hopefully you've bookmarked activistpost.com and naturalblaze.com. Outstanding sources of information. We really do appreciate our sponsors who help us to keep this operation going. Legal Shield will get you an attorney in your area for a very reasonable price. How about $1 a day? $30 a month is the introductory rate. They'll take care of all kinds of legal things for you. If you don't have a last will and testament or a medical directive or a financial power of attorney or any of these things that you've got to have, we learned during COVID that you've got to have it in advance. It doesn't do you any good once you're in the hospital or once you're incapacitated. So it's going to be up to you to be proactive about it. But Legal Shield can help you. You can knock it all out in like 1 month. I mean, you could do it in a day. It's very easy. Go to don'tgetpushedaround.com. That's the website specific to this show, and you can read up about it. You can knock those documents out in right away with the app that they put on your phone. It's very easy to use. And, if you run a small business, they have a small business plan. If you carry a gun, they have documentation for that as well. If you need the ID shield option, you can add that on. All these things are like a la carte items that you can add on to your package. So if you're interested, I suggest just read up about it. If you're in the United States and Canada, go to don'tgetpushedaround.com. Check it out. See what you think. See if it's right for you. And also a huge thanks to one of the newest sponsors here, Augustin Farms. Man, I like to have a storable food sponsor just in case, because we need it. It's good to have it, be prepared and thinking about that. Augustin Farms will give you 10% off on your first order if you use the promo code MACRO. You can get an emergency kit, just a bucket of food if you need that. But if you're looking for very specific items, freeze-dried food, they have butter, powder, eggs and dairy, fruits and vegetables, meats and proteins. They have baking mixes. They have recipes for all of this, camping supplies. They've got all kinds of things going on there. This place has been in business since 1972. So it's worth checking out. If you haven't been over there, take a look. Go to augustinfarms.com, AUGASON, farms.com, promo code macro. All right. Well, speaking of farms, we're going to talk about all the farms that the dirtiest company in the world has been buying. You know about BlackRock, do you? Have you heard about BlackRock? Oh, Lord. Hey, it's, you know, to talk about evil corporations, you know, and there's so many to choose from. Where do you start? Monsanto had that record for a long, long time because they make poisons that impact everybody. So they rightfully were put on that list. But boy, for my money, BlackRock has to be in consideration, not just because of what they're doing, but just due to the sheer size and scale of their operations. And when people say, oh, BlackRock owns everything, you think that's kind of a throwaway comment. Man, I went through the list of everything that they own, and they own everything. I mean, you scroll down the list to find companies that when it gives you a number in terms of their percentage of BlackRock's portfolio, you go below 0.01 and you scroll down even further, and it almost says NA. It's 0.00. It doesn't even register. It's not even one, you know, it's not even 1/100th of a percent. And you'll find companies in there and you'll be like, that's a major company. It's like they own them all. They have so much money. So we're going to talk about that. I want to talk about who BlackRock is, how they came about. I think it's important that we know this. I want to know what they're doing in Ukraine. I want to talk about the World Economic Forum. I want to know what their plans are with Bitcoin and the ETFs. And, you know, let's talk a little bit about Larry Fink, find out who he is. You know, you won't be too surprised to find out what tribe he's part of and what how he views the world. It's not going to be great. But, you know, since they're in the news all the time, I think it behooves us to know as much as we can about who these people are, what the major corporations are that they control, and what they have planned for us. So we'll just start at the beginning. We'll start with the basics here. Here's the thing. BlackRock is not some intergenerational banking establishment that's been passed down from bloodline to bloodline, from intergenerational European banking families on down the line. It's not that at all. The place was started in 1988. Okay. It's not one of these. It's not old money. It's new money. It's a lot of money, man. So it's based in Manhattan. They have 70 offices across 30 countries, and they went public back in 1999. So they were, you know, they formed in 88, and their reason for forming into existence, to provide institutional clients with risk management for their assets. Okay. So it's kind of boring, financy, you know, not overly exciting. Until you know, if this was just a company that had $1 billion under management or a couple $1 billion, you wouldn't even really pay much attention to them. They wouldn't get on your radar. But this one has, it's not only the size and scale of the operation, but the duration in which they've been able to accomplish this in less than 40 years. I mean, some of these banking behemoths that they own have been in existence for hundreds of years, or for at least over 100 years at least. So what is the secret? What's the secret to BlackRock's success? Does it have to do with having blackmail on people? Well, probably. I think a lot of these groups incorporate that. They call it corporate espionage. That's a nice way of putting it, right? When you walk into that board of directors meeting and you've got everybody by the balls because you've got pictures of them from your pal Jeffrey Epstein, who was friends with Larry Fink. I know everybody's extremely shocked by that. Well, let's go into this. We'll talk about who started it and what they're up to. Larry Fink, that's the name that you hear. You know, what a perfect name. But he's not the only one. He's one of the founders. Keith Anderson, Hugh Frater, Ralph Slostein, Ben Golub, Susan Wagner, Robert Capito, and Barbara Novick. They're part of the group that owns BlackRock. They're the founding group. But much in the same way that BlackRock owns large chunks of all of these other companies, some of these other companies own large chunks of BlackRock as well. So it's like a circular firing squad. You can never it's interlocking boards of directors. This is how the world's run. You know, the idea that it's troops on the ground, that's too messy. And, you know, and you can't always foment a civil war and get people in one country to fight with themselves. And sometimes you have to do it a little bit more covertly. And when it's done with bankers, there's less bloodshed, but it's just as devious. And so the control of the world really happens in the boards of directors. And who sits on the board of directors of all of these companies? Well, typically, the person who would sit on a company's board of directors would be somebody who has a vested interest in the company. You know, it might be the founders. Of course, the founders are usually on the board, but it's outside investors as well. If somebody in your life loaned you $1 million to start your business and you had, and that person didn't want a job as the head of, you know, chief operating officer, they just want their investment to be overseen and managed properly. You, in your board of directors, you would need that person to be on your board. They're the largest financial contributor to your operations. They have a right to see what's going on. They want to know what their money's getting them. They want to make sure that you're doing the right things with their money. So it's reasonable to have a seat on the board when you've got a lot of stock in that company. And who owns majority shares in these companies? BlackRock does. So they're on the boards of directors of all of these companies. And then consequentially, there are other companies on their board of directors. So it's a gigantic circle jerk. They all know each other. They work with each other. They go to the same meetings or the synagogues or the country clubs or vacations or whatever it is. I mean, they're all at the World Economic Forum or the Aspen Institute or the Council on Foreign Relations or trilateral meetings. I mean, this is a group that all understands what benefits them. And so BlackRock comes around. And to put this in perspective of how not just how much money BlackRock has, because it would be one thing if they had just over the century accumulated a ton of money. But like I said, this has happened relatively quickly, but it's the recent acceleration in BlackRock's balance sheet that is alarming. Like what they've done in the past 2 years is beyond what most corporations achieve in their lifetime. In 2023, BlackRock's assets under management, which is the term that you would use to describe this, what they have. They have money, they go out and they manage money for a lot of clients. So how much did they have? Well, in 2023, which is only 2 years ago, I'm not talking about a million years ago, 2 years ago, they had $9.1 trillion under management 2 years ago, which is quite a bit. That increased in 2024, just a year later, from $9.1 trillion to $10.65 trillion. They increased their assets under management by $1.5 trillion in 1 year. Microsoft's a $2 trillion company. BlackRock increased by almost the size of a Microsoft in 1 year, which is unheard of. But it doesn't end there, because from 2024 to today, the numbers that just came in for the second quarter of 2025, BlackRock has gone from $10.65 trillion under management to $12.5 trillion. So they've grown by another $2 trillion just since last year, and they grew by $1.5 trillion the year before that. This is a behemoth. This company is out of control. So for being in, you know, what BlackRock considers themselves to be as a company when they were formed is that they said that they were going to provide institutional clients with risk management for their assets. So for being in the risk management field, they sure do put themselves in massive conflicts of interest over and over again. They have access. You see, BlackRock has access to sensitive future government policy documents. And the reason why they have access to this is because they've been hired by the government to help work on them. So the government and also the Federal Reserve will hire BlackRock to come in and help them manage help them not just manage, but create future policies future monetary policies for the United States government. They bring in consultants to help them figure out the best way to spend the money. The consultants they bring in are BlackRock. And so what do you think BlackRock's going to do? They're sitting in these meetings going over government policy or government ideas that will become policy in the future, giving them a massive opportunity to front run any of this. Right. So, And BlackRock advises, again, to be clear, they advise countries, not just companies. So they have advanced knowledge of market-moving information because some of it is their policy being implemented. It's like their idea. You could ask the guys at BlackRock, what do you think the government's going to do next year with regard to this component here? And they don't have to speculate. And the reason why is because they're in the meetings coming up with the government policy. So they know exactly what it's going to be in advance. Now, imagine having that sort of information and then having a big pool of money that you can play around with. It'd be like being a sports gambler and knowing that the starting pitcher for tomorrow's game is going to be scratched. That's information that would be extremely helpful if I wanted to bet that game tonight, knowing what I know. So BlackRock is front running all of these trades because they know what's coming. It's absolutely rigged. So, and I said that BlackRock will work with companies, obviously. They'll work with countries, and they have also started working with central banks. In fact, our central bank, the Federal Reserve, back in 2008, they were advising the Fed back when the financial crisis happened. They were advising the Fed about what to do with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They were paid $180 million for their advice on what to do with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And the advice that they gave the Fed was information that they also used to position themselves accordingly to benefit from the recommendations that the Fed was going to implement, because it were their recommendations. It's just crazy. But if you think $180 million is a lot to be paid, wait till you hear what they spent on COVID. The Federal Reserve put BlackRock in charge of managing the bond program during COVID. And that was a bond program that was worth $4.3 billion. So you've got the wolf guarding the hen house in an obvious way. And it's alarming. You know, because all these leftists get out in the streets screaming about fascism and Donald Trump's a fascist and he's this and that. They don't even know what fascism means. And they just don't know the definition of it. If ever there was an example of fascism, or maybe even I'd say, depends on how you want to allocate this. If you want to say 60-40 benefiting the government, then it's fascism. If you want to say it's 60-40 benefiting BlackRock, then maybe it's corporatism. Who cares? It's the blending of the state with big business for the benefit of both of them, as far as I'm concerned. And that's where we are. They don't recognize, they're screaming about a fascist and but pointing in the wrong direction. When BlackRock owns everything and you can actually walk out into the world and see the results of that. So where did it get started? Well, how did it come into existence? Well, the money to finance the firm came from Pete Peterson of the Blackstone Group. He bought 50%. And originally, what they did is they called this company Blackstone Financial Management. They get these companies get confused, right? There's Blackstone and there's BlackRock, right? They're different companies. But Blackstone incubated BlackRock when it started. Founder Pete Peterson said, I got money to start this. We'll start it. I'll own half. You guys own the other half. And we'll call it Blackstone Financial Management. And then in 92, it officially changed its name to BlackRock. And now it is the biggest financial company in the world. It's just massive. So when I say that, what does that mean? Well, let's talk about that. I want to talk about some of the top companies that BlackRock controls. So it's very tech heavy at the top. They call this group the Magnificent Seven, not to be confused with the awesome Clash song. But these are the companies. So at the top of BlackRock's portfolio is NVIDIA, the computer chip manufacturer. And what they'll do is they will give you a number. They'll say, as a percentage of BlackRock's entire portfolio, the portfolio that's roughly $15 trillion, of that percent, of that entire pool of money, what percentage does this company represent? This other company. NVIDIA represents the largest percentage of BlackRock, which is 6.67%. And to put things in perspective for you, if your company was to be 1% of the total allocation of BlackRock, it would be $150 billion. $150 billion equals 1%. NVIDIA is 6.6%. So they have $1 trillion of NVIDIA, just BlackRock. Okay. Next on that list at 5.83% is Microsoft. Again, I'm going to round up here, but we're talking about $900 billion of Microsoft stock, which has been one of the best performing stocks in the last 30 years. Next on the list, 5% of BlackRock is made up of Apple. So now we're at $750 billion worth of Apple stock. Next on the list is Amazon at 3%, a little over 3%. Now we're talking about $450 billion of Amazon stock. Meta, 2.5%. Now we're $375 billion of Meta stock. Alphabet, they've split this up into two sections, preferred stock and common stock. If you combine them both together, you're over 3%. So you're talking about another $500 billion of Alphabet stock, which is the parent company of Google. Next on the list is Tesla at 1.29%. So $200 billion of Tesla stock. And those seven companies right there make up what is known as the Magnificent Seven. So this is the top half. I'm going to continue with this list just because it's interesting to know where everybody else shakes out. I'm not going to do all the math on it. But next on the list is BlackRock owns a massive stake in JP Morgan Chase. It represents over almost $200 billion of JP Morgan Chase money. Below that, Eli Lilly, a little under 1%. So $150 billion of that pharma stock. Visa, 0.9%. iShares, which is BlackRock's own mutual fund. They own almost $150 billion of that. MasterCard is on the list. Then Netflix, Johnson's & Johnson, ExxonMobil, Costco, Oracle, Walmart. And last on the list of the top 20 that they own is Home Depot with 0.6%. So again, as you scroll down through this list, and I found the list of everything that they own, you scroll down and you get to these companies and they'll say like 0.01%. And you're like, oh, they own, that's like a fraction of Blackstone or BlackRock's entire portfolio. It's like, it's almost nothing, you know, but what does 0.01% even represent? It represents $1.5 billion. So it's like, even when it's just a nothing percentage of the overall BlackRock pool, it's, the pool is so big that just being on the list is notable. So speaking of that, I'm going to list some of the notable companies on this group that BlackRock just owns literally tens of billions of dollars in each one of these companies. Because if you're on this list, you minimum of at least $5 billion of investment BlackRock has in each of these companies. Ready, set, go. Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Chevron, Palantir. They actually own a $58 billion investment in Palantir. That should be alarming. Salesforce, Merck, Procter & Gamble, United Health Group, Goldman Sachs. You'll notice all the banks are on here. They own the large chunks of every bank. Citigroup, all the communication companies are on here. Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, Qualcomm. They own over $5 billion of investments in McDonald's, in American Express, Morgan Stanley, Progressive Insurance, Comcast. They have 30 billion reasons to want Pfizer to succeed. Charles Schwab, Honeywell, Marsh & McLennan, talk about 9/11, Boeing, and Blackstone, right? So those are the groups that they own at least $5 billion worth of their stocks. And in some cases, just really controlling interest in the company. Now, keep in mind, every one of these companies that I've mentioned has BlackRock people on their board of directors. That's what you get when you invest $5 billion plus dollars into these companies. You get a say in how things go. So if you want to push ESG, how do you do that? Well, if you're BlackRock, you sit in every single board meeting and you say, from this point forward, we're doing ESG. And if you have a problem with that, we sell all of our shares, tank your stock, put your company into disarray, and we move on to the next one. So when do we start ESG? Next week? Good. It's been agreed on. So that's how things get done. They just own, they control the boards. And this, they can replace, the CEO's not doing what you want them to do, fucking replace them. I'll get everybody on this board to vote against you, and now you're out. And then we'll put our guy in there, and they'll do what we tell him to do. And if you have a problem with ESG, but we want it, we're going to do it. So here's another list, just outside of the top 100, but still like outside of the top 100, but some of the most dangerous companies in the world. Carlyle Group, Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, PayPal, Las Vegas Sands, owned by Sheldon Adelson, Apollo Management, Apollo Global Management, Leon Black's company from the Epstein list, Leidos, Equifax, meaning they own your credit scores. Expedia, so they could enforce social credit, system-wide travel or no travel for you, right? GoDaddy. In one of the more frustrating investments that BlackRock is involved in, Dollar Tree. The audacity of those motherfuckers. They'll take even a dollar they want. It's not enough for them. Lululemon. You can wear your Lululemon while you shop at Dollar Tree. And then they own all of the large chunks of all the home builders, several of them I've worked for. Lennar, I worked for them. Pulte, worked for them. D.R. Horton, don't buy a D.R. Horton house. Toll Brothers, they own Toll Brothers. Weyerhaeuser, who owns Pardee Homes. So they own quite a bit. They own DraftKings. So wait, you're on your phone putting a three-game parlay together tonight on your DraftKings app. Just know that BlackRock owns that company. I mean, owns them enough to make decisions. Let's talk about some statistics with BlackRock, because I think it's fascinating to see where they've come in the last 20 years. Back in 2005, their stock price was $62.85. They did $1.2 billion in revenue in 2005, very respectable. And of that, they had a $234 million net income, which is pretty good. I don't know. I'm looking at the numbers now. That's somewhere around 16%. That's real good. And they had 2,151 employees. So, okay, that's where they were 20 years ago. A little over $1 billion in revenue, $62 stock price. Where are they now? Well, last year, they did $20.4 billion in revenue. So from $1 billion to $20 billion, their net income went from $234 million to $6.369 billion. BlackRock made $1 billion every 2 months last year. That's insane. They now have 21,000 employees, up from 2,100. And their stock price has gone from $60.85 to $1,025. So if you were an investor in BlackRock over the last 20 years, you're buying dinner. So, but part of what makes BlackRock frustrating is their rampant hypocrisy, because they claim to be helping the environment and social issues and governance, ESG. They pretend to be helping the general public and caring for this planet and prioritizing goodness over profits, which is, first of all, hilarious. Second of all, incompatible with their stated mission, and anybody that prioritizes that over profits in that line of work should be fired for incompetence. But BlackRock holds $11 billion worth of coal-fired power plants while pushing an environmental scam. So this is the part that makes people insane when they dig into the details of it. It's one thing to just be a bad company. I don't care about this. I don't care about polluting. I don't care about people. I'm all about profits. Fine. At least that's, you are as advertised. But BlackRock plays this game where they're gonna be the saviors. They're gonna come in here and fix the environment, make sure that everybody's being treated fairly and nicely, and that the right number of one-legged Eskimo midgets with autism are running Fortune 500 companies, you know, because we have to have representation across all spectrums of people and blah, 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 right? It just goes on and on and on. And then you go, yeah, well, then why do you own $11 billion worth of power plants that burn coal? And the answer is because they're ridiculously profitable. That's why. And that this ESG stuff is all horseshit from the beginning, has always been. It's not about saving the world. It's about control. It's about making people do what you want them to do. And BlackRock plays by the golden rule, and they've got the gold. So remember I said that they own a bunch of companies, but other companies also own them? Well, let's talk about who owns BlackRock then. Because if BlackRock is the big bad boogeyman, and they are, but then you go out and own BlackRock stock, then aren't you kind of an asshole by default in a way, you know? So who owns BlackRock? Well, 9.08% of BlackRock is actually owned by their largest competitor, Vanguard, which is fascinating to me, but not surprising. Next on that list is BlackRock itself. They own 7.02% of themselves, which you go, why do they own themselves? You need to own yourselves when you go public. Otherwise, everybody else owns you and you have no stake in your own outcome. So they own 7%. You might think like, well, don't they own like 80% of their company? No. By the time when you go through the public process, you get divvied up to a point where you're lucky if you retain 10% of your company. But that's part of the deal that you make. It's not a bad thing necessarily, but I would never take a company public because you lose all control. But next on the list is State Street. They're other competitor besides Vanguard, and State Street owns just about 5% of BlackRock. But when you own 5% of a company that big, you're in business. Temasek owns 4.28%. That's I want to say it's the Singapore authority investment fund. Bank of America owns 4.28%. Capital Research Global owns almost 4%. Morgan Stanley owns 3.5%. Charles Schwab owns a little over 3%. Capital World owns almost 3%. And Geode Capital Management owns 2.3%. So if you add this all up, the top 10 companies own 36% of BlackRock. So top 10 own about a third of it. So what else do they do besides buying companies that are heavily invested in tech? Well, they also like logistics companies, companies that are going to be useful for a long time. You know, Amazon is a extremely popular service right now, but there was a time when Amazon didn't exist, or we didn't even know you needed an Amazon. And in the future, maybe somebody will challenge them. But if you own the Panama Canal, you're in a pretty good spot. There's not a rival Panama Canal coming. I know they've talked about going through parts of Nicaragua, and they've talked about another one going through Mexico, and they've looked at it, but that ain't happening. That's a logistical nightmare. But BlackRock owns 90% of the Panama Canal. So what if they decided that they wanted to make things difficult on everybody and they shut down the Panama Canal? I mean, it'd be operating against their own self-interest, but let's just say they had a bigger play going on and they said, we don't care. We're just going to shut down the Panama Canal. Now, you would like to think that that would be a decision that maybe the Panamanian government would make, or if that happened, then the American Navy would be down there pretty quickly to rattle some cages. But what do you do if BlackRock owns it and they decide they want to shut it down? I don't think they will. There's no reason for them to want to do that. And I'm not saying they're going to do it. I'm just saying they could. I mean, they can do quite a few things. It's not just the Panama Canal that they own. They bought Hutchison Hong Kong. And they had just done that deal. And I remember I was on the train from the airport into the city, and I'm going by. I went right by the Hutchison Hong Kong port. You can see it right out of the side of the train. And I was looking at it going, oh shit, that's it. That's part of it, at least. Massive ports, right? But Hutchison Hong Kong is a consortium that owns other ports. So this is why it becomes Russian nesting dolls. And some of these, you go, oh, they own that company. And you go, oh, that's cool. And you go, but do you know what that company owns? And you're like, no, what do they own? And you're like, well, they own this, this, and then you're like, holy shit. So you go, oh, they bought Hutchison Hong Kong. So they've got the Hong Kong port and the Panama port too. You go, yeah, but if you own Hutchison, they own 43 ports in 23 different countries, including mainland China, Shenzhen. So it's like all of a sudden, now BlackRock owns the ports in China and around the world. And you start going, whoa, hang on a second. There's a lot of information going through those ports. There's a lot of cargo, and you want to know what's coming in and what's going out. I mean, at what point do we designate BlackRock as an intelligence agency? They're going to have quite a bit of information about the comings and goings of foreign ships into countries and ports around the world. So the line gets very blurry here. So they also own the media. And we know about BlackRock a little bit. We talk about it, but the general public, this is not a conversation starter here. They're not getting into the ins and outs of what Larry Fink wants, but we are. And part of the reason why the general public isn't talking about it is they don't know about it. And one reason why they don't know about it is because BlackRock owns the media. And if they don't want their media partners talking about it, it won't be talked about. They own 18% of Fox. They own 16% of CBS. They own 13% of Comcast, which is, what's Comcast? Well, NBC, MSNBC, or at least it was MSNBC until it recently transitioned to MS Now, which is MS Now, not going to be here much longer. I'll tell you that, man. You guys are just rearranging deck chairs over there at MSNBC. But this is the reason why we don't know that in the last year, DuPont, Monsanto, and Cargill recently bought up 30% of all Ukrainian farmland, some of the best soil in the world, legendary Ukrainian farmland. Who owns those three companies? BlackRock does. So who really owns the farmland? You know, it'd be incorrect if you went out there and said, BlackRock owns all the Ukrainian farmland. They would say, oh, no, they don't. No. That's owned by Cargill, Monsanto, and DuPont. I'll have you know. And you get corrected for that. And you go, fuck, I thought BlackRock owned it. Well, they own the companies that own it. So who really does? You know what I mean? And because of this, you know, the relationships that they have with the American government, they have, the relationships they have with every government puts them in a unique position to wind up, getting opportunities that most companies would never get, like getting the first crack at managing China's mutual fund market, which is what BlackRock got. They were tapped to manage the investments in China while advising the Federal Reserve at the same time. Don't you see these massive conflicts of interest that exist here? So they run the Panama Canal. They own the company that owns the ports in China. And so they get first shot at managing their China's mutual fund market, which is massive. I think that goes without saying. And but it also, also sort of it emphasizes this relationship that China and BlackRock have had for a while now. And I think it's pretty alarming. I mean, BlackRock in and of itself is a dangerous company, but when you pair them with some entity like the Chinese Communist Party, and they say to them, you know, we want a social credit system and we need the technology in here to make that happen. BlackRock is behind that. They are helping them with the social credit score. And in doing that, by doing the ESGs for businesses here in the United States and the social credit system in China that they're a part of, it's really like for the ESG scores, it's a backdoor social credit score. It's a social credit score for companies, right? And then that translates down and eventually into people. It's already happening in China right now. So it's the future is now in China. But eventually for the United States, if they had it their way, the likes of BlackRock would take that control structure that's set up in China and export that across the world to a variety of countries. Definitely the EU. They would like them to all be under the facial recognition tagging systems and that social credit, but also North America as well. And of course, it's coming. They are and ESG scores are just basically behavior modification by bankers who hate you, right? So it's like the worst people in the world telling you how you have to behave so that you'll get the cookie at the end of the month. It's pretty disgusting. I mentioned ESG. BlackRock was the driving force behind that. That's environmental, social, and governance. And you get these scores for them. The World Economic Forum, who is partnered with BlackRock, more on that shortly. The World Economic Forum is also pushing ESG. It's deeply unpopular with the general public. I mean, the Wokeians like it, but their opinions are stupid and nonsensical anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But the general public sees this as a non-starter. And so eventually, it's either going to collapse under its own insanity or they're going to just force it through, because what they have planned is an environmental score for everybody with carbon scores to follow. World Economic Forum's already working on that with MasterCard, issuing a carbon score for everyday items that you would buy, and those scores being calculated by MasterCard when you swipe your card at the checkout, and giving you a carbon score for your day's transaction. Whatever you bought is going to have some sort of score. Now, how that score will be calculated, I don't know, but I'm sure it'll be stupid, nonsensical, and frustrating. But it's designed to quantify carbon dioxide, which is just a totally crazy concept that's anchored in bad math. But either way, BlackRock is the group that's behind it. So lately, they seem to have taken their foot off the gas a little bit. I'm not going to say they put their foot on the brake, but it seems like they took their foot off of the gas a little bit with the ESG, which would be fantastic. But as I said, carbon scores to follow. Carbon allowances will be a part of that. Carbon taxes, and then ultimately a carbon offset marketplace that they will control. So, I mean, I think it's just important when you think of this BlackRock structure and you're trying to get your mind around what it is they own, you have to understand that the reason why it gets so murky is that BlackRock owns entire companies who own other entire companies. And so you have to go down the chain a little bit. It might be some obscure company that they own that doesn't ring a bell. And then you look at what that company is and you go, oh my God, I recognize all these names on here. I had no idea. So you know, good luck. You know, it's one thing if you want to do a boycott, divestment, sanctions movement against Israel, because you can find products that say made in Israel and you boycott them. But there's no label for what BlackRock owns. You're never going to find that in the nutritional label on the side of the box. It's just not going to say it down there. It doesn't need to. It's buried. The ownership structure's there. It's available if you want to see it. But for most people who are not actively looking for it, you're not going to know that BlackRock has a large share of your favorite retail store or restaurant or whatever it is. I mean, you already know that they own the companies that make your cell phones and your computers. Okay. So all of that stuff is captured. Let's talk a little bit about Bitcoin, because this I'm alarmed about. Okay. So IBIT is BlackRock's ETF, electronically trading funds. This is a old concept that's new to crypto, new to Bitcoin. ETFs, they do it for a variety of reasons. The main reason why somebody like BlackRock would start an ETF is because institutional holders have limitations on what they can buy, what sort of products they can buy. They can buy stocks and they can buy bonds, but they can't buy Bitcoin directly. So because they can't buy Bitcoin, let's say they want to, but they just can't because their hands are tied with the way they manage their money, that it's not an option for them. But they can own mutual funds. They can own a basket of, they can own stock in a company that owns a bunch of Bitcoin, and you can get exposure that way. So what you're seeing now are these Bitcoin treasury companies like Strategy and 21 that are coming out and are accumulating a ton of Bitcoin. And people look at that and they'll go, well, why would I buy stock in that company if I could just buy Bitcoin? The answer is you wouldn't, more than likely, unless you were restricted. Unless, let's say, you have a 401k and you go, I'd love to convert my 401k into Bitcoin. By the way, speaking of that, you can convert your IRA and 401k into gold and silver through Tony Arterburn over at Wise Wolf. Go to macroaggressions.gold. I'm not kidding. So if you have like if you've been at your job for a while, you got an IRA and 401k, and you look at it and you go, I want Bitcoin exposure, but I can't get it here. Well, what you would do if you didn't call Tony is you would say, well, maybe I'll buy this IBIT fund. I'll buy shares in the IBIT fund. It's the BlackRock ETF. It's the closest thing I can get. Or I'll buy shares in Strategy. I can't get the, you know, so this is a workaround for it. It's not meant to, they're not trying to say this is better than Bitcoin or it's worse than, it's just a different vehicle for owning it. And BlackRock owns 750,000 Bitcoin, making them the number one holder of this $85 billion value in current market cap right now. But I have to say, fuck these bankers. I don't trust them at all. I don't like them sniffing around my Bitcoin. I don't like the government sniffing around it. I don't like any of these people. I like Bitcoin. I like the architecture of it. I like that it's permissionless peer-to-peer money that I can send to people and all around the world. I like the component of it that it makes it not private. I like privacy for other things, but I like the architecture of Bitcoin that makes it available to see. I do not like I don't like it when the bad guys like it. I don't like that Larry Fink likes it. I don't like that Donald Trump likes it. I just don't like that the government, I don't want them to hate it. I want them to be indifferent to it. But, you know, it's past the point. It's past that. And this is sort of the reality of the current situation. So the ETFs launched a while ago. And they control 3.5% of the 21 million Bitcoin. That's a lot. Now, of course, there probably aren't 21 million of them now. There's probably 17 million, I don't know, lost over the years. So that percentage jumps even higher then if you're calculating what they own based on a factor of 17 million or something. So whatever, it's a lot. They own too much, as far as I'm concerned. Too much centralization of Bitcoin into the hands of one entity makes me nervous, but especially when it's the worst company in the world. I suppose, depending on how you view it, this could be the best advertisement in the world for Bitcoin. I mean, if BlackRock is sniffing around and they know value and they've got a lot of money and they see opportunity, they know opportunities, they know how to make money. They know how to buy it at a low price and have it go to a high price. Now, so you may take a look at this and say, they know something we don't know. The average person doesn't know. They may be trying to control it. They may be planning to fork it at some point, which is, you know, it's been done before. But I don't know. I can't say for certain what they plan to do with this. Maybe they just plan, they see it as an appreciating asset that they're not making any more of, and they want to control as much of the network as they can, and they buy this and sit on it, and they've got diamond hands and they can sit on it forever. Maybe. But also maybe at some point they decide they want to put it all up for sale and tank it. I just don't know. And that's the thing about these people, is that they're not honest operators. So anything is possible. The idea that they could be buying all this up just to crush it, it has to be a consideration. Now, it might not be possible because of the architecture of Bitcoin. It may be like when China cut off all the mining and it just got diffused across the world and everything picked up where it left off. Maybe one of these days BlackRock gets out. I just don't like the idea of the common man not having the ability to buy any of these 750,000 Bitcoin that are being held by the worst company in the world. So is it good for price action of the coin? Yeah. Because theoretically these Bitcoin are going into the vault and aren't coming out for a long, long time. So the supply shrinks, the demand is increasing, stands to reason the price will increase. I just don't know. I can't say what they're going to do. But you know, they see Bitcoin as the next monetary system. And one of the things that's interesting is that it will separate them from their competitors, Vanguard, because Vanguard refuses to buy any Bitcoin. They're non-hodlers. So maybe this $85 billion stack that they're sitting on today is worth $10 trillion a decade from now. And the only thing that Vanguard can do to benefit from it is the fact that they're the largest owner of BlackRock, but that they choose not to participate in Bitcoin in the way that BlackRock does. So I don't know. We'll see how things play out. But if that is to happen, then BlackRock will create an insurmountable lead in the asset management dick measuring contest that's currently happening between State Street, Vanguard, and BlackRock. So we'll wrap up with this. We'll just say that the philosophy of BlackRock is globalism. That should go without saying with their ties to the World Economic Forum. But they are the worst of the worst. Run by a deeply Zionist entity, Larry Fink, partners, you know, friends with Epstein. He's in that group, that cult. And they're powerful, powerful banking elites, especially in the mega group kind of category. Not that Larry Fink is a member, but, you know, it's that Jewish billionaire supremacy group that tends to tilt the tables in their benefits where they can. So let's talk about this. Let's talk about the fact that Larry Fink, bloodthirsty Zionist eugenicist who wants a world government and has $15 trillion to play with. He has now recently been tapped to replace Klaus Schwab at the World Economic Forum. Are you aware of this? This is a recent development. Is this making sense yet? The bad guy banker is going to be in charge of the WEF. The WEF is pushing for a fourth industrial revolution, the blending of man with machine in a concept known as transhumanism, which was coined in 1957 by Sir Julian Huxley, the head of the British Eugenics Society, as the rebranded name for eugenics. So the bloodthirsty Zionist banker with $15 trillion at his disposal is going to be in charge of running the transhumanism agenda, which is depopulation. When I wrote that Octopus of Global Control book in 2017, and people started asking me, in your opinion, which tentacle is the most dangerous? And they always were surprised when I said it was not the military and couldn't figure out why I kept saying it was banking. This is why. So Larry Fink is now going to be the top man at the World Economic Forum. And they have big plans for humanity. And just to be on the safe side, Larry Fink is also, well, his BlackRock company are partners in the Trilateral Commission. They're a member of their corporate partners and corporate partners with the Council on Foreign Relations. You know, those two groups that Jeffrey Epstein was a member of as well. You remember that, right? Remember your buddy, the guy who was running sexual blackmail entrapment operations? You know, that guy. He was in these groups with everybody as well, with Larry Fink. I wonder what they were talking about. So BlackRock is investing in the panopticon that's being constructed around us while consulting with governments and central banks and simultaneously owning $58 billion of Palantir. And when they aren't doing all this nefarious stuff, they're filming BlackRock commercials, filling them with actors who would later go on to pretend to shoot at President Trump. It's just all so ridiculous here. Shop local, starve the beast where you can, get some gold and silver, get yourself some Bitcoin, convert your 401k with Tony, do all the things that you can while you still can, because BlackRock's on a roll. If you would, you could share this episode with the friends and family you think might be interested in it. If you want to connect with me, macroaggressions.io is the place to do that. Thanks, everybody. See you again soon.